Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have. Hi, it's recovering United States Congressman J.D. Hayward. And aiding me in my recovery is a generous dose of real talk from my friend Audrey Russo. Keep listening to her or suffer the consequences.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Climate Week comes yet again, and the globalist/communist entities waste no time. They use the well-indoctrinated children to spread their net of lies. Will Americans step in willingly? Well, we'll find out more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Diana West is the author of several best-selling books, including The Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization, and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. And she's also the author of the new bestseller, The Red Thread, A Search for Ideological Drivers Inside the Anti-Trump Conspiracy. She's a former nationally syndicated conservative American columnist whose blog is one of Newsmax's 50 best conservative blogs and tackles controversial subjects such as the impact of Islam and the failures of counterinsurgency. Diana has contributed essays and features to numerous periodicals, including The Wall Street Journal, The Weekly Standard, and The Washington Post. She has also been a columnist for The Washington Times, Scripps Howard News Service, and United Media. And she can be read at The Daily Caller. Diana is also a popular analyst and contributor on both radio and TV. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Diana West.
Hello, Audrey. Thank you.
No, it's so great to have you with us always, Diana, always.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be back. So much to talk about.
Oh my goodness. Oh, my gosh. So, they did go there. Impeachment.
Well,
at least, sort of, right?
I'm calling it impeachment light. This is my new hashtag. Because there's been no vote.
No,
right,
see,
so it's not official.
Well, see, there it is. You said reality. That is the truth. And what Nancy Pelosi's little display there, she was calling it official, but it wasn't official, was it?
No, it wasn't, only insofar as we don't know who is going to go on the record voting for impeachment. I mean, that remains to be seen whether we actually get that record, because then those members will have to go home and defend what is an excursion into insanity. I mean, this is this. I feel like I'm watching a movie. I don't feel like any of this is real.
Right.
And I don't like the movie. I don't want to be sucked into it, but it's really important to understand the plot here and what they're trying to do to us. So I think if we go into this with a lot of skepticism, we can understand and keep our distance from these crazy people.
Yeah. And just for what we know so far, as this develops, is they were basing a lot of this on rumor from a so-called whistleblower. It's not a whistleblower because they did not hear the conversation between the president and the president of Ukraine. So, and the president already released the transcripts of that call, and it proves what they were inferring as to be incorrect.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, the transcript is out there. Everyone should read it. It's only 5 minutes, 5 pages long. And it's interesting. It's interesting every time you see how people really talk behind closed doors. We thought they were closed doors. It turns out that, you know, they're not closed doors. This is not privileged conversation when it leaks like this. But we can now evaluate it for ourselves. And we have to go back to the hysteria as it was generated. Remember, the Wall Street Journal said that President Trump mentioned Biden 8 times. He did not. He mentions them once.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the kind of thing that you know, needs to be corrected, understood. And then the conversation, there's nothing wrong with anything that's said there. And indeed, it's the president of Ukraine that brings up the whole matter of corruption first. He says he's a reform president. He's ran that way, wants to govern that way, he tells our president, and he talks about wanting to drain the swamp. I mean, this is how the conversation develops. So the whole thing is, look, in the 1960s, the bad guys, the communists, the wise ones would say, and I'm talking about from the other side, the issue is never the issue. And those, in many ways, are the wisest words we can use to understand when we're being manipulated. This isn't about anything having to do with the Ukraine, or Ukraine rather, and our national security, as the Democrats are saying. Yeah. President Trump did nothing that holds hostage our national security. I mean, right. These are the same people that don't want to close our border.
Right.
Now they're national security hawks. I mean, the issue is never the issue. In other words, security is not what's uppermost in the minds of these Democrats.
Yeah.
This is once again a political hammer. Mm-hmm. All of these things are political hammers. This is the closest one at hand. Goodness knows what next week will bring.
Yeah. Well, just to show the hypocrisy about this, where they're saying it's illegal what he did, which is not illegal. He did nothing wrong. But they had no problem with Obama trying to twist the arm of Nigeria when they were asking for military aid. And he said no until they would make lawful homosexuality. They said no, and he said no military aid. But that was okay.
That's okay. Isn't that fascinating? Well, yes, that's a great example. And look here with then Vice President Biden. We have him on videotape proudly discussing how he threatened to cut off $1 billion in aid to Ukraine to stop a corruption investigation going on in that country involving his son.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this is fine with the Democrats, and calling attention to it is fine with the Democrats. What they hope to do is focus only on President Trump then asking, inquiring, being interested in this issue as being the reason for impeachment. I mean, the whole thing is really, again, an exercise in some kind of madness, but there is method here, because once again, we're dealing with information warfare in this perpetuation of the big stupid lie. I mean, look at just even Nancy Pelosi's first reaction. The White House releases this 5-page transcript. Everyone can read it in a minute. Well, Speaker Pelosi had not read it by the time she faces the first media questioning about it. And she actually said, I should find her actual quotation here if I can. She actually basically said she had not read it, but the fact remained, and then she went into a song and dance about how President Trump was harming our national security in this. In other words, repeating what she didn't know to exist in a phone call she hadn't even bothered to read about. So what's important here is the rhetoric, yeah, the rhetorical argument that President Trump is holding our national security hostage in this phone call with Ukraine, which is, again, not factual in any way,
right,
speaks to the hypocrisy. As we know, they don't even want to close our border to all comers and all the rest of it. And yet this becomes the media message in hand in glove with the Democrats in their hatred, their loathing of President Trump, whom they see going toward re-election, and they will do anything they can to stop it, even this kind of exercise in just collectivist madness.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I want to jump over to another interesting topic here. We've discussed many times in the past, with communists, it's all about manipulation and ultimately control. Now, enter Climate Week and the brainwashing of our youth and using them to further manipulate the rest of the population. Isn't this what we're seeing with Greta Thunberg?
Oh, yeah. It is, you know, again, we're sort of living in this, a series of reality shows that are really not about reality at all. They're all contrivances. And in the Greta Thunberg story, which, you know, gets displaced by the Trump inquiry, which had displaced earlier the Kavanaugh hysteria, these are all massive exercises based in, again, big lies. Whether we go back to, you know, just a few days ago or a week ago, we had the Kavanaugh resurgence of calls for impeaching Kavanaugh. I mean, how many calls for impeachment can we take here? It's incredible. But think about how dizzying this sequence of events really is, and they're all based in nothing, and it's a matter of capturing media space and attention and time and sound bites. I don't know what, but the climate change one, it seemed like that we were going to be on that for a while. Maybe the Democrats saw that as being a losing situation and moved on to the next. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it is sort of a series of recurring fires. We're stuck with the climate change thing because this is into our education system, starting from a young age, whereby we are creating terrified, frightened children like Greta Thunberg, who are convinced that really they will go to sleep one night and they will wake up and there will be no climate or whatever they're thinking. I mean,
yeah,
you know, the whole thing is so crazy.
It's sick.
But it's very sick. And when you see this kind of exploitation of the young, now I would say Greta Thunberg is probably having the time of her life in the sense of being this
central
international
right,
figure.
Right.
She sailed here in this state-of-the-art solar-powered yacht that no doubt was fabricated out of all kinds of petroleum products.
Sure, I mean, of course.
You know, and technology and, you know, all of the things that the Western world has to offer is based on its massive use of energy and so on, created that fine yacht that brought her here. And I understand they had to actually fly crew in for the return trip. So there goes the carbon footprint savings, so-called. But anyway, looking at this person, you know, she is an international celebrity, so we can almost put her aside. Think of all the children who are not, but who are being manipulated, exploited, and terrified. And it's a disgusting spectacle. But again, you're going to this notion of not being able to go to facts, not being able to go to science, not being able to go to reality. You have to go to hysteria and emotion. And I would say that with all of these three cases, Kavanaugh, climate change, impeachment, it's all of it based in the same wells of emotion. You know, and this kind of goes to so much of what I was working with when I wrote my first book, The Death of the Grown-Up.
Right.
2007 is when that book came out, and a lot of it was trying to work through how we'd gone from really a fact and logic and virtue-aspiring society to an emotional, childlike, instant gratification society.
Yeah.
And it all of these, you know, just to use these three examples, they all share in that same resorting to not a discussion, not a debate, not anything traditional in that sense of actual really civilized life. They go to base emotion,
yeah,
and whipping up hysteria. And all of them also speak to a very anti-democratic impulse as well, which you might say is more primitive and emotional as this sort of trajectory takes us toward. You know, it's not about, in the Trump example, it's not about feeling that they can go to the polls and beat President Trump. They have to remove him from office. Look across the pond where we see a similar spectacle with Boris Johnson,
exactly,
the Prime Minister,
yeah,
of Great Britain. Now you've got an intercession by the, some Supreme Court that doesn't even have jurisdiction in the United Kingdom, mm-hmm, saying he should be removed from office. The whole thing is it's all about anti-democratic forces based on hysterical crowd control,
yeah,
and that's frightening.
Yeah.
You know, it's very frightening. Will they win? Will they be able to do this?
Well, as long as we have your books out there to make sure that people are educated on this, then we could find out. Well, as a matter of fact, I was going to bring up Death of the Grown-Up. You start, I think it was chapter 4, I think, Mike Mails, you have a quote from him, which I love. It says, the deterioration in middle-aged adult behavior has driven virtually every major American social problem over the past 25 years, end of quote. I mean, isn't this exactly what we're seeing here? Children leading children?
Yes. I mean, certainly in the easiest way to grasp it, yes, absolutely. We see children leading children. We see this deterioration of historical knowledge, of moral character as an aspiration, of objective truth. I mean, these are big ideas, big problems, big concepts. And when you see all of those things compromised by this emotional recourse to childlike behavior, you are seeing those kind of guiding precepts being corrupted. And why would that be? Well, those are the things that really save us. Those are the things that a democracy depends upon, for people to govern themselves. And so the metaphor becomes this childlike behavior, but really it's an attack on our people, on ourselves as self-governing individuals. And so it's kind of like the death of the grown-up for me was my way into this gigantic problem that we're always trying to understand. And that's when you start to really kind of, you see it, and it's easy to see, and you can identify all these different aspects of it. And then when you see this behavior come up against, for example, on 9/11, coming up against Islamic law, which creates childlike behavior in those that it conquers, those that adhere to it, who are not the overlords, of course, or in communism, which is the next thing that I ended up moving toward in terms of understanding our decline, because you see communism also having that same effect on people in terms of control, controlling speech, controlling individual liberties, and so on. This becomes sort of a childlike model for conquered people to adhere to. So all of these things really do speak to this loss of liberty, this loss of self-governing ability that depends on elevating the childlike, on rewarding emotionalism, on giving people instant gratification, on junking the virtues, on junking a religion, on taking away the whole notion of aspiring to wisdom, aspiring to goodness. All of these things are now seen as uncool, rigid, the patriarchy, you know, they get all these bad names stuck to them that make people go the other way.
Mm.
And where we go is to this terrible state of being like children. Well, what happens to children who are people who are like children? They are controlled by people who are like adults. And one of the things that I was really struck by that I came across when I was researching the death of the grown-up was something out of de Tocqueville, who, when he traveled through the United States in the 19th century and wrote his amazing observations about that trip, he really felt like the only thing that could take us down in terms of taking away our independence and so on and our growth trajectory and our uniqueness was if we did become reliant on the state, if we did become childlike with a superior force in the state that would do things for us. And this was where the only way that he thought tyranny might take hold in the United States. And indeed, we have seen nothing but really from at least this past century that we can look back on, that terrible progression toward a tyrannical state that regards us as children, that we regard the state as parental. And this is sort of where you get welfare state mentality, cradle to grave, government benefits, programs, all the rest of it, that are the very undoing of the individual, of the rugged individualism that was inculcated in this country by our founding, by our ethos, by the kind of people who left Europe and came here in order to find this new way and in order to live this liberty life. And so this kind of all their common hallmarks to all of this that all come together all come together, Audrey, this week in these crazy events that we're watching. But there are common themes here, and you know, you just hope people wake up to them and really push back. And I think people are. I think that you know, thanks to President Trump, basically his existence, you know, there has been this awakening, this understanding of we are not who they think we are, and we need to reclaim who we are and reject them. And I think a lot of that will be, you know, unfolding in this next election cycle.
Yeah, exactly. And the president, of course, has made his position yet again clear at the UN.
Oh, fantastic. Bravo. Maybe the impeachment inquiry was so that we wouldn't have time to focus on that amazing speech. I haven't even read the whole thing yet. I saw pieces of it, but I mean, my goodness, the salient point being that the future does not belong to globalists. The future belongs to patriots. Well, that's it. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. Are we going to be patriots who have a country, who have a nation and a national destiny? Are we going to be globalists who don't have a nation, who are just part of the humming horde, who have overlords in a global government? I mean, that's essentially the choice. It couldn't be starker, yeah. Especially when you look at these Democratic candidates for president. All of them are globalists.
Yeah. All of them are. And there was a lot of cringing in that room.
Absolutely. And there was a precious picture. When did you see it? It was on the front of the Wall Street Journal when President Trump was at some sort of climate seminar of some kind, where he showed up for a while. I think he left early, but he was there for 15 minutes, I think. And all of the world leaders are looking in one direction, rapt at the stage, and he is looking in the other direction with kind of a suffering expression on his face. It reminded me, I think it was his first appearance with the G7 or G8, whatever it is, his first appearance where they were all looking one way in a class picture and he was looking the other way.
I know.
So perfect.
And I have to be honest that what we're seeing here is a perfect example of what you discuss in all three of your books, The Death of the Grown-Up, which to me lays the foundation so you can understand, so we can see and understand the immaturity. This is not growing to adulthood, but we're seeing it's going backwards into, you know, immaturity, and they become infantile. And then we go from there, then it lays the foundation really for American Betrayal and The Red Thread. You can understand it better. And we're seeing this right before our eyes right now, all three of your books.
Are.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think we are, and you see it especially. I mean, really looking at that the Greta Thunberg phenomenon, you see all of it coming together because you look at her, you see the child. However, you also see the left exploitation of such children. I just, you know, went back a little bit in some newspaper archives, and I found a fascinating headline. Going back to what year was it? Probably about 1962 or so. Mao's Children Crusade, labeled defensive effort. It was about Mao's exploitation of children, calling youngsters into the streets to frighten the masses into obedience and silence. Mm. So in other words, we're looking at the I guess this would have been the phenomenon we think of as the Red Guard period, where you have students who seize the everything, and they terrorize revolutionize education and various institutions. And it starts with this call on youngsters. Go back to the 1960s. We see the Communist Party in the United States, I believe it's 1959, actually devising their plan to use American young in their political takeover that we think of when we look back on the 1960s, which of course harnessed youth, mostly college students, however, also high school students and all the rest of it, trying to tell the grown-ups that they knew better. And when we think about it in a very general way, we don't understand how organized it was, how the Communist Party was behind so much of that rebellion, not to suggest that all the students were communist members or anything like that, but the leadership, the cadres, the organizers were driven by Communist Party USA directives, certainly starting in 1959, 1960, and so on. And then, of course, things can take their own shape and, you know, are guided or what have you. But we see this as a concerted strategy. So whether you're looking at Mao, whether you're looking at the 60s with the Communist Party, whether you're looking going back to another totalitarian system, look at the use of Nazi youth in Germany in Hitler's time. Right. I mean, you know, Hitler youth was a very important feature of that whole brainwashing period, which of course only lasted about a dozen years. We're looking now with this communist organization of youth and other institutions and so on, other facets of life, nigh a century at least in terms of its organizational features, in terms of its replication of itself in subsequent generations, its mushrooming into different kinds of projects, and most important of all, their successful elimination of our watchdogs in the country. And this would speak to what happened in Congress with another Communist Party directive in the United States around 1960. This really took off. You've got the abolition of the House Un-American Activities Committee, and in the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Internal Security. These used to be our elected investigators who looked into this stuff. Now we're blind.
Then
we have the various, you know, infiltrations of all of our agencies over time. We're completely blind. And, you know, I look at the White House sometimes and think President Trump is in the Alamo.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's a great analogy. I love that. I love that.
I hope it works out differently.
Yes, of course. Please.
Yes.
believe it or not, our time is up. We went so fast. Where can the listeners follow and support your brilliant work and purchase your books, including The Red Thread?
Oh, thank you. Yes. Well, that did whiz by. DianaWest.net is always my best central organizing platform, you might say. And it has all my information there and links to all my books.
Okay. And of course, I'll have the links for that and also in social media in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the honor button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links that Diana just shared. Thanks so much, Diana, for sharing your brilliant assessments with us. We look forward to your return to the show. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Oh, thank you so much, Audrey.
Thank you so much.